Baptism is a source of comfort. You've died to the law. And he's talking in the context of baptism in Romans 6. So that now you belong to another. You belong. You see, and all the language here is passive. There's no you've decided and you've chosen and you've been back. You belong to him now. He's taken charge of things. And the outcome of that ought to be a great deal of assurance. You see? The antidote to accusation is assurance. The voice of accusation is irrelevant. Might be true as rain. You might be the most miserable sinner on the planet today. You know? And that there is nothing you can do to hide what you've done, thought, or said, from yourself at least. But don't forget that you belong to another. The voice of the law has been silent and stilled where it accuses you. Now let's go on in that vein and see how this plays out. And we'll jump to Galatians. Verse 5, while we were living in the flesh, our sinful passions aroused by the law were at work in our members to bear fruit for death. But now we are discharged from the law, dead to that which held us captive, so we serve not under the old written code, but in the new life of the Spirit. Now looking back in verse 5, while we were living in the flesh, our sinful passions aroused by the law were at work in our members to bear fruit for death. What was the job of the law? What is the job of the law with regard to the old self, the sinful self? What does it do? Well, look at Paul's language here in verse 5. What did the law do? What does it say? Yeah, what is the actual effect of the law? When you preach, when you keep telling people what they should be doing and how they should be living, eventually what happens?
They become worse.
They do just the, and of course, this is why in law-based churches where there's a lot of legalism preached under the guise of Christianity, this is why what happens over time without fail is that this pious icing gets laid over the whole place. And everybody gets into groupthink. They're all acting alike. They're all talking alike. They use the same vocabulary. They all, because they realize what? Internally, I'm a mess. But I can't acknowledge that because then I'll make it obvious that this program isn't working. So I've got to at least appear to be on the road here. And so when you start living with that kind of denial about what's really going on inside, what happens? That's when you get pietism, legalism, you know, Bible-toting Christians, rows of people with Bibles on their laps, one after the other, taking copious notes. You're trying to tell me that every single one of those people is so doggedly, passionately in love with Jesus, they just can't wait for the next thing to fall out of the pastor's mouth? Give me a break. I've been a pastor way too long to believe that. But that's the groupthink model, see? They have to do that because they can't do something, they can't do anything else.
They'll be exposed.
Of course. You know, they're sitting there, and you're sitting there, you know, during the sermon, thinking about lunch, and, you know, going to the beach, and you didn't bring your Bible, and everybody else sitting there, and they're going, "What's this? Where's your Bible?" Well, you know what I'd say? Well, I can't repeat what I would say. But you see my point? You see, the accusing voice of the law is demolished in the gospel because the only thing the law can do is accuse us. When the pastor gets up and says, you know, well, here's a, go ahead, I'm sorry.
Earlier on in Romans, didn't Paul say about the law that when the law, when the law came, it increased sin.
Yeah, gets into that here too. Yes, so that's what we're saying. When you preach the law and you don't see its job as limited to exposing us so the gospel can move in, and you preach the law instead as the very vehicle by which you're going to come to know God more deeply, more intimately, you're setting the people up for disaster. You're setting them up to become duplicitous, to become religious phonies. Because when they walk out the door on Sunday morning and head back into the week, they know darn well that they're not ever going to live up to what this expectation is. And if they kid themselves to the point where they think they can, then they're really in trouble. So any way you look at it, it's bad news. Exactly. It has a limited role, and that's to expose us. That's all. Yeah, well, we're going to get there soon here if I can shut up and move on here with the text. Okay, let me just read a large chunk here, make a couple of comments, and go to Galatians. What shall we say then in verse 7? That the law is sin? By no means. Yet if it had not been for the law, I should not have known sin. I should not have known what it is to covet if the law had not said, you shall not covet. But sin, finding opportunity in the commandment, wrought in me all kinds of covetousness. And that's exactly the point right there. When you preach the law, sin finds opportunity to work. So when you give people the law as a vehicle by which they're going to enhance their spiritual lives, what you're really doing is throwing them into the sin blender. And things are going to get stirred up like crazy. You know, when these big mega ministries like Jimmy Swaggart and who's the other guy that got
Baker?
Caught with his pants down? Baker, and you know, and there are all kinds of lesser lights that you never hear about that go down the same way all the time. You know, you hear about these things and you think, was this surprising? Not surprising at all. But they're so far up there. I mean, they're so hot. How can they possibly? Because they're playing a game with themselves. It's denial. After a while, you really start to think you aren't that much of a sinner. Oh, boy, then you're in big trouble. I was once alive apart from the law. This is in the last part of 8, or in verse 9, rather. But when the commandment came, sin revived, and I died. The very commandment which promised life proved to be death. Now, how does that work in real terms? It works like this.